and a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand on your own time by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website, nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's lawgroupnc.com. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, a major shakeup across the media landscape being reported last night. CBS is axing Stephen Colbert and his show, The Late Night Show, on CBS. Colbert has operated and took over that show back in probably 2015 or so, right before the 2016 presidential election. And with that, an announcement yesterday from CBS that the show is set to be canceled as we head into the early parts of next year, with Colbert making the announcement on his show yesterday. This is how he opened his monologue on his CBS show yesterday evening.
Before we start the show, I want to let you know something that I found out just last night. Next year will be our last season. The network will be ending The Late Show in May. And yeah, I share your feelings. It's not just the end of our show, but it's the end of The Late Show on CBS. I'm not being replaced. This is all just going away. And I do want to say that the folks at CBS have been great partners. I'm so grateful to the Tiffany Network for giving me this chair and this beautiful theater to call home. And of course, I'm grateful to you, the audience, who have joined us. Every night, in here, out there, all around the world, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. I'm grateful to share the stage with this band, these artists over here every night. And I am extraordinarily, deeply grateful to the 200 people who work here. We get to do this show. We get to do this show for each other every day, all day. And I've had the pleasure and the responsibility of sharing what we do every day with you in front of this camera for the last 10 years. And let me tell you, it is a fantastic job. I wish somebody else was getting it. And it's a job that I'm looking forward to doing with this usual gang of idiots for another 10 months. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
Y'all ready?
We're gonna lock in.
So that was a part of Colbert's opening monologue last night on his CBS show, the announcement coming out yesterday from CBS that was going on. And what I want to talk about this morning, and you know, I've made this point a variety of times and I'll continue to make so. I am not in favor of people losing their jobs. I'm not in favor of people getting fired. I'm not one of these cancel culture guys like they have on the left. I am not happy that Stephen Colbert is losing his position at CBS. I'm not happy that The Late Show is getting canceled. And the way that I want to go about this morning is talking about the media landscape and what has changed in the last 10, 15, or 20 years that has made a show like The Late Show with Stephen Colbert not really feasible and not really practical long term. You know, you look at what a show like this takes to produce, and you just heard the commentary there from Stephen Colbert. 200 people work on that show. Getting some commentary in on our Rumble live chat this morning. He has a staff of 200. Good grief. Not only that, Stephen Colbert is making about $15 million or so a year from CBS for hosting The Late Night Show. And with that, this is not a sustainable business model going forward. You know, we're not back in the 1960s, 70s, or 80s where individuals do not have access to wide swaths of content. And again, I think this is important to note, and it's not just unique to television. We've seen the almost complete and total evaporation of the newspaper industry. radio has seen a significant hit, significant declines over the last 10 or 15 years or so. There's been some dwindling of the radio industry, newspaper, radio, and television is the next step. Those are how the dominoes are falling in this very evolving and ever-changing media landscape. And the reality is this. These shows are not profitable. Looking at the ratings on Stephen Colbert's show, which, by the way, is the highest rated of the three late night TV shows. You've got Jimmy Kimmel on ABC, Colbert on CBS, and Jimmy Fallon on NBC. And looking at the, this is the quarter one ratings for these shows, according to latenighter.com. They show the ratings. Now, these are in thousands. So when you see 2417 for Stephen Colbert, that's 2.4 million viewers in that audience block. 1.7 million for Jimmy Kimmel and 1.1 million for Jimmy Fallon on NBC. Interestingly to note, you look at Greg Gutfeld's show on Fox News, which is averaging more than any of those shows. You add, Gutfeld is almost beating out Colbert and Fallon combined. They've got a little bit more than him. But you can look at these numbers and see why a show like this is not going to continue long term. It is an incredible suck on resources and cash for a network like CBS and Paramount. 200 people work on Stephen Colbert's show. They are paying him $15 million a year to host the program. You can only imagine what it costs for them to operate that show and to operate and produce that program on a nightly basis. And the reality of this is very simple. Audiences have different content to watch. Audiences can go on YouTube, can go on Netflix or any of these other streaming services, of which Stephen Colbert's show was on, and watch content that they find more engaging and more interesting than what is being produced by CBS and The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Now, I will take a little bit of a side here before we get back to the media business as a whole. His show's not funny. This model of late night TV that has been, I would argue, probably stuck in its place since the 80s is just not what people are looking for anymore. I mean, when you look at the model that those three late night shows take, Kimmel, Colbert, and Fallon, it is a very antiquated TV model. You've got a guy that comes out of a curtain, does his opening monologue, gets a couple laughs in front of the audience. They go to a commercial, they come back, he's sitting behind a desk, and they welcome out some celebrity or some politician or some guest. Everybody claps, a bunch of pre-canned questions. Then they go to another commercial, a band plays a song, and then that's going to do it for tonight. Have a great night. That is an antiquated model in late night TV. Now, it was very successful for the likes of Johnny Carson and Jay Leno. And all of these shows that have existed in that late night sphere for quite some time. It was a very successful model, but it's not anymore. The audience is shifting to what I will describe as more authentic content. And you don't need to go very far to figure out that that's what audiences are clamoring for. You look at some of the top podcasts in the nation right now. They consist of people like Joe Rogan, Sean Ryan, The Ruthless Podcast, which, by the way, Fox News just struck a major partnership deal with to syndicate that show throughout their Fox Digital brand. And when you look at all of that together, that's what audiences are craving. Why do people like Joe Rogan? Because it's authentic. He's sitting in a room with a guest, sometimes smoking pot, drinking some whiskey, and having a 3.5 hour in-depth, as real as it gets, authentic conversation about a litany of topics. From AI to human evolution to, of course, political stuff when you look at having individuals like J.D. Vance and Donald Trump on the program. It is the gambit of commentary. And when you look at Joe Rogan's success and why he is so popular. I don't know that it's necessarily because, and this is no dig on Joe Rogan, I very much enjoy listening to him. I don't think it's necessarily because he's the greatest interviewer in the world or he's the most intelligent guy in the room. It's because it's an authentic conversation with people that you don't get anywhere else. I mean, you can go through and look at Rogan's YouTube numbers. I mean, he's averaging almost 1 million views just on YouTube per show. That's just one platform. That doesn't include Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all of the other platforms that people listen and watch Joe Rogan on. It's the authentic nature of the conversation that people, I think, really are craving. And so you compare what somebody like Joe Rogan does, which is not, you know, always a comedy show, is not always a comedy podcast. Yes, Joe Rogan is a stand-up comedian. Yes, he has, I would argue, the most successful comedy club in America right now with the Mothership down in Austin, Texas. But it's not a comedy show. So you look at what Joe Rogan is doing and you compare and contrast that to what Kimmel, Fallon, and Colbert are doing. It's completely different. Not only is the format of the show different, but I think what the audience is craving is very different. And it's why when you look at the podcast charts and you can see what shows are rising to the top, what shows are doing really well, a vast majority of these shows are incredibly authentic in what they produce. Now, this is just the Spotify chart. There's other platforms, of course, and other places where people get their shows. But this is the podcast chart on Spotify. Joe Rogan's at number one. Tucker Carlson, who, of course, has been in a lot of controversy over the last couple of weeks, sparring off with Trump, is number two. But same thing, incredibly authentic in the conversation. That may be disingenuous sometime, but the conversation is authentic. It's obvious that it's not pre-scripted. Nobody's getting questions beforehand. There's no zingers. There's no punchlines with a laugh track behind it. It's an authentic product. You then jump down to number four, Theo Vaughn. Incredibly authentic show there. It doesn't until you get down to number six, where you see The Daily, which is a New York Times podcast. It's like a daily news show. Is then when you start getting into more of the, what I'll call scripted shows, the more produced content like that. Then you've got an NPR podcast up there, and it goes on and on. But the vast majority of these shows are unscripted, and a lot of them are on comedy. I mean, you can look at, you know, you got Tim Dillon on here and other shows that are incredibly authentic and scream and meet an audience that is looking for that kind of content. I don't know anybody that is chomping at the bit, that is clamoring to sit down at 11:35 p.m. and watch and listen to what Stephen Colbert has to say. I don't think that's not necessarily all Stephen Colbert's problem. It's just the format and the medium. It's that people are just not into that kind of scripted content. Got some commentary coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. In the 1980s, we taped Late Night with David Letterman with our new VCR and watched it over dinner the next day. Now we watch the Nick Craig Show, Ruthless and All In. And, you know, you look at what was going on in the 80s and 90s before you had streaming available, before many individuals had, you know, cable television or alternatives, DirecTV, so on and so forth. There was only, you know, a handful of channels to watch. And so those shows had a baked-in audience because there was, frankly, just less competition. But now when you look at the media landscape, there's an incredible amount of competition. I look at the industry that I was just in, you know, last year, morning talk radio here in southeastern North Carolina. That industry has been shrinking. Why is it shrinking? It's not because the shows suck. It's not because the content's not compelling. It's because there's alternatives. There's other opportunities to listen to things in the morning. Why is music radio struggling and been on a decline now for the past 10 years or so? Pandora, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, individuals don't have to sit through 3 to 6 minutes of commercials to listen to music. They can pay $12.99 a month for Spotify and listen to any song essentially that has ever been produced at no effort and at very minimal cost, with no commercials, no ads, no, oh, I don't like this song, I'm just going to have to sit here and suffer through it. No, you just go to the next piece of music. You just click the next button and it's done. You're on to the next thing. And so I say all of this to try and paint the picture of an ever-evolving media landscape. Let's go back even further. Why are newspapers dead? Because individuals don't want to have to wait until 7:30 the next morning to read what the hell's going on. They're using X. They're using Facebook. Every single media publication that is worth anything now has a major online presence. So why the hell would you subscribe to the newspaper and wait for it to show up on your door? And in the case of what's going on with many newspapers, including the Wilmington Star News, it's now being delivered by the post office. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm one of the lucky individuals that doesn't have their mail delivered until sometimes 7, 8, 9 p.m. So I'm getting a newspaper if I was subscribed. Of course, I'm not. If I was subscribed to the Star News, that newspaper would be produced, we'll just use a Wednesday morning as an example. That Wednesday morning newspaper is produced and goes to print Tuesday afternoon. So the news is from Tuesday morning and before. That news is already, when it goes to print, at least 12 hours old. So news that was produced and published Tuesday afternoon is not arriving in my mailbox until Wednesday night at 7:30 p.m. Everything that I'm reading is already over a day out of date. It's already a day gone. And with the ability to find content on social media, with the ability to go on FoxNews.com, CNN.com, MSNBC.com, The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, The New York Times, to be able to go on these websites and read content immediately, completely killed the newspaper industry. And it's why you've seen a couple of companies, one of the big ones is Gannett and the USA Today Network, that have just gobbled up all of these newspapers, and they're just syndicating content across the entire country because there's no readership. There are very few individuals that are still subscribing to the newspaper because there's nothing in there that's new. Everything is old. If you've turned on the television, everything that you've seen is already out of date by the time that the newspaper gets to your front door, gets thrown in your mailbox the day after, right? It's a dying medium. It's not because newspapers suck. It's not because newspapers are bad. It's an evolving media landscape. People don't want to have to wait 12, 14, 16, 24 hours to read the news. They want to get it now. And so they go online to do that. So that's what's going on with the newspaper industry, which you can imagine within the next 5 or 10 years will be completely non-existent. You'll still have some of your big papers. You'll still have the Wall Street Journal. You'll still have the Times and a couple of others that have broad national syndication. Local papers have been washing up and will continue to do so over the next 5 or 10 years because there's no audience. Radio is right behind that. It is a dying medium. Not to any fault of radio, at least previously. It's their fault now. They're putting no money and no effort into their product, but it's very much a chicken and egg situation. There's no money in advertising, so then therefore you can't spend money on product. It's a vicious cycle that radio's trapped in right now, and it will eventually lead to the demise of that medium. I don't think radio itself is going away, but the uniqueness of radio, right? Now in Wilmington, there's not a single morning talk show on in town. But that's likely never to be filled again, at least with the single talk station that's here. That's not going to happen. There's no money in it. Music radio, again, struggling with dealing with the behemoth streaming giants like Pandora, Amazon, and Spotify, YouTube Music. So that's going to be their big struggle. And television is next. You've already seen some of the decline in television. Now, where TV still has an unmatched product is local news. That's where television stations continue to shine, is the ability to produce a local newscast. And that is exactly what many of these stations are marketing very hard and put a lot of their money into. And yes, there's still a lot of money there because there are, essentially just two options, at least here in southeastern North Carolina. You've got two TV stations you can watch for local news, WECT or WWAY. They have got those markets locked down. Now, as more and more individuals search and seek out alternative commentary, alternative conversations, those numbers will continue to drop. And there's no question about it. Television news, local TV news in 2025 is nothing like what it was 15 or 20 years ago. It's a completely different ballgame. It's a completely different animal. And they've had to adapt and shift and do things that are necessary to keep up with the times. Right? Many of these shows produce their content online, so you can stream it on their website. I see whenever there's a big story, WECT does a Facebook live stream, a YouTube live stream, and they're sitting in a studio, John Evans and a couple of other people talking about a major story that's breaking in southeastern North Carolina. They are attempting to meet the audiences where they are. And that is something that is important to understand when you look at the whole of the media landscape right now. You have to meet audiences where they are. Because there is so much competition, because there is so much noise and so much chatter in the media ecosystem, you cannot force audiences to come to you. You have to meet them where they are. That's why this show is streamed live every morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and starting next week, it's also going to be co-streamed on Facebook Live. Again, meeting those audiences where they are. Some commentary coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. Your talk show was fantastic. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Rumble offers many different podcasts, Badland Media, Scott Adams Daily Show, The War Room. Exactly. You've got the opportunity to watch hundreds, thousands of different shows if you want to, many of them produced daily. And so how does traditional legacy media compete with that? How does Stephen Colbert and CBS, how do they compete when you can go on Rumble, you can go on YouTube, you can open up your podcast app and find hundreds, if not thousands of shows that are compelling and interesting to you? How do you compete with that? Oh, because you're on TV? Yeah, of course. Yeah, you've got that baked in signal. No question about that. You've got thousands of affiliates, CBS, NBC, and ABC affiliates across the United States that run those shows. Everybody, for the vast majority of them, everybody's got a television in their living room or somewhere in their house, and they've either got an antenna hooked up to it, or maybe they still have a traditional cable subscription. So yes, you do have a baked-in audience there. But when I can decide in the middle of the afternoon that I want to listen to something, and I want to find something that's compelling, some content that I'm really interested in, and I can just go on YouTube and search something up, or I can go on Rumble and search something up and watch it immediately. How do you compete with that? With a show that's on at 11:35 p.m. on the weeknights. Now, to the credit of these shows, all of them upload and produce their segments and upload them to YouTube, where they get some decent views, but it's not anything extraordinary. I mean, I was looking at the Stephen Colbert YouTube channel, and it's got a sizable audience. It's got 9.5 million subscribers, but you look at some of the some of the views on these individual episodes, and yeah, typically his monologues gets about 1 million or so views, so that's pretty substantial. But there's a lot of clips on here that have 23, 25,000, 40, 50,000 views, which, believe me, I'd love to be in the position where I had 50,000 views. But they're paying Stephen Colbert $15 million a year, and they have a staff of 200 people producing the show. That is not a sizable enough audience to, I think, justify that going forward. I don't believe that there are enough eyeballs that are craving out and seeking out this content for them to say, we need to do this. And as you heard in Stephen Colbert's opening monologue, they're not firing Stephen Colbert. Well, I mean, they are. But they're not firing Stephen Colbert. They're getting rid of The Late Show. They will no longer have an 11:35 p.m. weekday product that is equivalent to The Late Show. And from a financial standpoint, which is what CBS says this is, it makes complete and total sense. They're paying Colbert $15 million. They have 200 employees They've got this theater in New York City where the show takes place. What are they spending on that show a year? $80, $90, $100 million, if not more? It's an incredible amount of money to spend on a product that's only averaging about 2 million viewers, which is nothing like the Johnny Carsons, the David Lettermans, the Jay Lenos. Some of that is, again, because the media landscape has changed. If you want something like, if you want to listen to comedy, you know, one of the hottest podcasts right now is Kill Tony, which is not too dissimilar from these late night shows. There's a band, so on and so forth. But what does that show offer that these shows don't? It's incredibly unscripted. It is actually completely unscripted. You've got random comedians coming up to a stage. Their names are picked out of a silver bucket or a bowl, and they come up on stage and do 60 seconds of comedy. It is the most unscripted form of media that you can imagine. That's what people are craving. That is what audiences are craving for. And when you compare and contrast, you know, some of the numbers, again, just looking specifically at a comedy podcast comparison to what Stephen Colbert is doing, I mean, the numbers are insane. Now, this show is produced once a week versus Stephen Colbert's show every night, but these shows are averaging, I would say, probably close to 3 million views just on YouTube a week. That doesn't include Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of the other podcast apps. Over 3 million views a week just on YouTube. That's an incredibly large audience. And where are advertisers looking? They're going to those shows for a variety of reasons. And I think a lot of it, again, comes down to authenticity. When somebody that you trust, somebody that you listen to and is producing an authentic product says, hey, support X, Y, or Z company, you are probably more likely to act on that than seeing a random commercial baked in between Stephen Colbert's segments on CBS, because it's just a different animal. It's a completely different ballgame. That's why endorsements and live read advertising, like we do each and every morning with the Law Group, are so successful in terms of advertising, because you've got an audience that has trust and enjoys content and is invested in the content from the producers that they're watching. But they want it to be successful. You don't have that on national television. Now, Fox News is doing something interesting. I don't know if you've seen the Will Cain show that runs on the Fox News channel. It runs at 4 p.m. But they're doing something very interesting with his show. It looks completely different compared to any other show on Fox News. And I'm going to pull up an image here to show you what the set looks like for the Will Cain show. Here it is. This is not your Fox News New York studios with the big glass windows looking out on New York City, or your huge studio newsroom with 300 foot tall television screens. No, this is a desk with two microphones on it and an American flag and a TV screen in the background that says The Will Cain Show. This is very, very similar to what you see out of podcasts like Joe Rogan. It's the authentic nature. Now, just critiquing Fox a little bit, they don't actually use those microphones, which as a radio and audio nerd kind of rubs me the wrong way. They are plugged in, but they don't use the microphones. They use lavalier mics on their jackets. But the set is still there. The podcast set, the podcast studio, the style is still there. And I would imagine that as Fox News continues to adapt and change their lineup for whatever variety of reasons they may or may not do that, you will see more shows like this. You will see more of these more authentic programs versus, and again, no dig on Fox News, but you've got Brett Baer, who sits behind this glass desk, this beautifully produced and very elaborate glass desk, and it's very much a more stuck-up product. Audiences are not craving as much of that. They want the more laid-back. They want the more casual product and discussion that they feel that something like this gives them. And so that's what they want. And so going back to where we began this morning, looking at Stephen Colbert and CBS axing his show, it by the way, is not stopping until May of next year. I think it has to do, really, it has everything to do with authenticity. Now, Stephen Colbert is also, I don't think, very funny right now. He, like many others in the political left, have gone so hog wild on Donald Trump. Since Colbert's start in 2015, Trump has been a major punching bag for him. And I just don't think audiences want to hear that day in and day out. It's just not interesting to them, especially when it's really not that funny. However, with this announcement, CBS says it's purely financial. That is not the case, at least for some vantage points. Senator Elizabeth Warren thinks that there's something afoot. We'll get into her commentary coming up here in just a few minutes. Before that, I want to thank the Law Group for their continued support of the Nick Craig Show and let you know that when legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the Law Group right here in Wilmington. For over 20 years, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly and as promptly as possible. Great news, folks. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or visit their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. Elizabeth Warren, old Pocahontas, has got some thoughts on Stephen Colbert being fired. We'll get into those coming up here in just a few minutes as the Nick Craig Show rolls on live on a Friday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us. We're talking about the ever-evolving, ever-changing media landscape this morning. The big news yesterday out of CBS, they are canceling not only Stephen Colbert's Late Show, but the Late Show concept as a whole in general. So that will take place in May of next year. So 10 more months for Colbert and CBS as they phase out their late night show product. They claim it's purely financial. Colbert makes $15+ million a year. There are 200 people that work on the show. The real estate where they produce the show is in New York City. I can imagine the lease or the rent on that is not very inexpensive for CBS financially. And it makes sense as the media landscape evolves, as more and more individuals turn off the television and produce and consume rather a vast majority of their content on social media, whether that's YouTube, X, or Facebook. It's a tough business out there. I'm well aware of it. I'm well adapted with it, and it's very tough. However, Elizabeth Warren, the great Native American senator from Massachusetts, well, she believes there's something else afoot. She posted this on her X profile last night. CBS canceling Colbert's show just 3 days after Colbert called out CBS's parent company, Paramount, for its $16 million settlement with Trump, a deal that looks like bribery. Americans deserve to know if the show is getting canceled for political reasons. Watch and share this message. So here's Colbert's monologue back a couple of nights ago over this settlement with President Donald Trump.
My parent corporation, Paramount, paid Donald Trump a $16 million settlement over his 60 Minutes lawsuit. As someone who has always been a proud employee of this network, I am offended. And I don't know if anything will ever repair my trust in this company. But just taking a stab at it, I'd say $16 million would help. This settlement. This settlement is for a nuisance lawsuit Trump filed claiming that 60 Minutes deceptively edited their interview with then-candidate Kamala Harris last.
Now, I'm going to stop Colbert here. I don't want to get into too much political stuff, but I do need to bring up and reference this point. Donald Trump sued CBS because they did, in fact, deceptively edit an interview with Kamala Harris. They, as a FCC-regulated entity, omitted important parts of that interview and edited it to make her look better than she is. That is why Trump sued them. That's why they settled for the tune of $16 million, because they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar. Now, Colbert brushes this off, again, because he's a flaming leftist. He has no ability to look at anything objectively, which is also another reason why I believe his show is struggling rating-wise. Because, again, we talk about authenticity. There's nothing authentic about what Stephen Colbert is saying right now. Well, they're being claimed it was a nuisance lawsuit that CBS allegedly deceptively edited. Now, Stephen Colbert, just be honest with yourself. CBS, in an attempt to make the Democrats look good and make Kamala Harris not look like a babbling moron, deceptively edited her interview to make her look better than she was. Just call a spade a spade. That's what people like. Why is Joe Rogan so popular? Because Joe Rogan calls a spade a spade. He interviewed Bernie Sanders back a couple of weeks ago, and throughout the interview, and it wasn't a highly combative interview, but throughout the interview, Joe Rogan said, Bernie, what you're saying is insane. What you're laying out as a pathway forward for the American people is not sustainable economically. He pushed back on the narrative. He did the same thing with Trump. He's done it with J.D. Vance. That's the authenticity that people are craving, not this bootlicking garbage from Stephen Colbert and CBS, which is exactly what it is. Let's go back.
Claiming that 60 Minutes deceptively edited their interview with then-candidate Kamala Harris last fall. Paramount knows they could have easily fought it because, in their own words, the lawsuit was completely without merit. And keep in mind, Paramount produced Transformers, Rise of the Beast. They know completely without merit. Ah. Now, unlike the payoffs from ABC and Twitter, Paramount's settlement did not include an apology. Instead, that's good. Instead, the corporation released a statement where they said, you may take our money, but you will never take our dignity. You may, however, purchase our dignity for the low, low price of $16 million. We need the cash.
So that's a little bit of the back and forth. You know, I'm not going to subscribe to Pocahontas' idea here that Stephen Colbert was fired because he called out CBS. I mean, he's doing this in kind of a mocking way, in a mocking form over the commentary over this deal with Trump, which, by the way, if CBS and Paramount believe that it was with no merit and there was nothing to back up the claim, then they shouldn't have settled for $16 million. They should have let it play out through the court system. There's a reason that they settled at the tune of $16 million. It's probably because they didn't want to risk going to court and losing and having to pay a significantly larger sum of money. But Colbert even believes that there's more afoot here about a potential merger. Take a listen to this.
Not the music I was expecting. Okay. That was me dancing in the sky. And some of the TV typers out there are blogging that once Skydance gets CBS, the new owner's desire to please Trump could put pressure on late night host and frequent Trump critic Stephen Colbert. Okay. But how are they going to put pressure on Stephen Colbert if they can't find him?
Now, the irony in all of that is they will not be able to find him come May of next year. His show will be gone. I don't think I subscribe to the idea that this was a political decision by CBS and Paramount. All three of the late night shows, Fallon, Kimmel, and Colbert, all are flaming liberals and leftists. They hate Republicans. They hate Donald Trump. They've literally been dogging him for over a decade now. That is nothing new. This is not some new thing that they're trying. They don't pretend to be objective or funny. They attack Republicans constantly, making jokes on their behalf, which is fine. It's comedy. But then, of course, you'll constantly give Democrats a free pass. Every once in a while, you'll see a good quote or a good clip where they're making fun of the left, as they should, because here's the part that many of these networks don't understand. Comedy, at least when you're talking about a show like this or any of the other late night shows, is supposed to be, at least from my vantage point as a viewer and a consumer, you're supposed to be an equal opportunity offender. I don't care if you make fun of Republicans and call things that they're doing stupid or silly. Again, it's comedy. But then you also have to be willing to do the same thing with your own side. And that's what these networks fail to do, and it's why they have continued to hedge and lose so much of their audience. It's not funny. There's nothing funny about saying Republicans are terrible, awful, and evil every day and not mentioning the Democrats. You have now taken a format that can be funny, making fun of both sides, claiming the things that Republicans do are stupid, claiming things that Democrats are doing are stupid. You can't continue with an audience. You can't continue to gain any level of, I would argue, notoriety or success when you alienate half of the population and only make fun of them. Right? You look at Stephen Colbert's show back when he was on Comedy Central. He played a caricature of like a Bill O'Reilly type. He pretended to be this conservative right-wing guy on the Colbert Report, which aired over on Comedy Central for well over a decade. That show was funny. He made fun of Republicans. He made fun of Democrats. It was a funny political show, and he was very successful in doing so. Why has something like Saturday Night Live lost so much of its audience? Why is it no longer the program that it was in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s? It's the same problem. They beat up on the right. They constantly dog Republicans. And again, Trump has been a phenomenal punching bag for them for a decade. And for the most part, now, SNL has read the tea leaves on this. They have woken up and they have begun also making fun of the left because, again, it's funny. It's comedy. That's what it's supposed to be. So they're seemingly course correcting a little bit on that. But for a long time, and the reason why that show lost so much of its audience is exactly the same problem. You can't just be a quote unquote comedy show and only beat up on one side of the population. You can't just only be beat up and put yourself in a position where you're carrying water for the left and then beating up on Republicans constantly. It's not a sustainable strategy. It's not something that works. And it's why many of these shows, including all of the changes in the media landscape that we've talked about this morning, are continuing to struggle. It's why the advertising isn't there like it used to be. It's why the audience isn't there like it used to be. And that's going to continue because the media landscape is evolving. Now, that I would argue that these networks don't have a lot of control and don't have a lot of say over. The media landscape, regardless of whether these people want it to change or not, is going to change. But what they do and did have control over is the content that they produced. They had the ability to call balls and strikes. They had the ability to make fun of Democrats and Republicans evenly. They chose not to do that. They chose that it was more important from a network perspective to carry water for the Democrats while beating up on Republicans. That was, I would argue, probably their cardinal sin in all of this. They completely screwed up dealing with what people would say is funny comedy, right? I'm a staunch conservative, staunch Republican. When people make fun of the right and the left, I find it funny. When I turn on a show and it's just bashing Republicans not incessantly and there's nothing about the Democrats, it's not funny to me because it's not comedy. Call out both sides for their crazy, stupid nonsense that they do. That's what comedy is. At least that's what many of these shows have been for decades, but not anymore. Some commentary coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. You only need to watch, quote, comedy shows to know how the channel leans. Exactly. And that, I think, was a grave mistake by them. They allowed their own political bias and their own inability to look at the political landscape in America, not through the lens of liberal activists that work in New York City. They were unable to shake and break that off, and it led them to this road where they thought this is what the audience wanted. It led them into the position where audiences said, this stuff's just not funny anymore. This stuff just doesn't make any sense. Why am I watching this garbage? I'm just going to pull out my phone and I can watch something that I'm actually interested in. Oh, and by the way, it doesn't cost me any money to do that because it's available for free on YouTube. All I've got to do is watch a 30 or 60 second ad and I can begin watching the content that I want. I can begin watching something that I think is actually funny, something that actually speaks to me and is something that I believe is authentic and something that I want to invest time into. You don't have that with these networks. And so that was, I think, their major and fatal flaw in all of this. Again, the evolving media landscape, they don't really have a whole hell of a lot of control over that. Now they can adapt. Fox News has done a phenomenal job at doing that. They are obviously a very partisan network. It is very clear where their bias is. No argument about that at all. I'm not going to sit here and argue that. I don't know many that would. But what they've done is they have seen what has been successful. They have branched heavily into the podcast space. They've got Will Kane on at 4 p.m. doing a show that is set up like a Joe Rogan. They've got Greg Gutfeld hosting a show at 10 p.m. that is a kind of a roundtable comedy late night show, which, as we looked at the numbers before, is beating out every show that the major networks are producing. And it's important to note that Fox News Channel is a subscription service, right? You have to have a cable subscription to watch Fox versus ABC, CBS, and NBC, which you can get by putting a $5 antenna from Walmart on any modern television and watch. That right there shows you the difference. When Greg Gutfeld's averaging 3.2 million viewers and Jimmy Fallon on NBC is only averaging 1.1, that is a major problem. The audience size for NBC News should be 10x what it is for Fox. Yet, Greg Gutfeld is annihilating these shows in the ratings. And so how does that happen? Why is that happening? Fox has understood the evolving media landscape. They have adapted and changed, and they are, again, one of the big stories this week was that the Ruthless podcast, which if you've never watched or listened, I would highly encourage you do so. Fox News has garnered a partnership with them and is bringing that under their branch of Outkick.com, which is a service and website that Clay Travis, who now hosts a syndicated radio show, works for Fox, started back well over a decade ago. They have been gobbling up these products and programs who have large invested audiences. Ruthless is the number one political podcast in the United States. They have gobbled up these products who have built-in audiences and are using the power and the resources of Fox News and the media entity that Fox is to expand and grow those brands. Fox understands it. ABC doesn't understand it. CBS doesn't understand it. NBC doesn't understand it. CNN sure as hell doesn't understand it. They hired Chris Wallace from Fox to host their new CNN Plus service, which operated for, what, a year and a half before they pissed away tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars and shut it down. I mean, look at what happened when Megyn Kelly went to NBC News. They poached her from Fox, paid her a fortune to host the third hour of the Today Show, and it was a complete failure. A complete and total strike and miss by NBC News. And it's not because Megyn Kelly sucks. She then left NBC News after making a boatload of money doing literally nothing and now hosts an incredibly successful and incredibly well-liked political podcast on SiriusXM called The Megyn Kelly Show. It is one of the top political podcasts in the country. That doesn't happen by accident. That doesn't happen randomly or just by surprise or by accident. On the Spotify charts, Megyn Kelly's The Megyn Kelly Show is the 9th most listened to political podcast in the news category in the United States. So Megyn Kelly wasn't the problem. NBC News was the problem. So all of this to be said, the media landscape is changing. It's one of the reasons why after I was fired from Cumulus 1 year ago this week, when I was chatting with people in the industry and figuring out what the next move was and what I was going to do and go forward, that I decided to branch off and do this show as an independent product, right? No radio syndication with it. It's not available on any terrestrial radio station. It's a digital product. Because, again, you're trying to meet audiences where they are. And where are those audiences right now? They're on their smart speaker. They're on their podcast app. They're on YouTube and Rumble and X and Facebook and all of these other platforms. And so it's an interesting time to be in media. I'll be the first to admit the uncertainty in the industry is something that is very much on my mind pretty consistently. But change happens. Media adapts. Consumers adapt and change, and what they're seeking and what they want to watch is constantly evolving and constantly changing. So to say all of that, Colbert is out. Elizabeth Warren and Adam Schiff believe this is some secret behind the room deal that CBS and Paramount made with the Trump administration so he didn't sue them into oblivion. Like most of the time, Adam Schiff is, as Trump says, full of Schiff, and Elizabeth Warren is a deranged lunatic. So I'm not sure that I'm going to put too much stock in that. I think this is literally what the headline is. It's a financial decision. It's too expensive to produce a show like this when you're only averaging about 2 million viewers a night. It's just not sustainable long term. So we'll see. We've got 10 more months. We'll see what happens with Colbert. Again, the late night show will be completely axed from CBS's lineup, and I'm going to be curious to see what they put in that 11:35 time slot to compete with the two other late night shows. Do they do something similar, not exactly as extravagant as the late night show, or do they just start running reruns or go to other content? So we'll continue to track and follow that as it progresses through the end of this year and through early next. I want to thank The Law Group for their continued support of the show. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. Thanks to all of you for your support over at patreon.com/Nick Craig and for joining us live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Have a great weekend. We're back with you Monday morning at 7 a.m. live and 24/7 via podcast for The Nick Craig Show.